You're listening to Face Off, episode 103, recorded January 10th, 2011. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am the other awesome host, Mark Sanborn.
Oh, are you trying to, are you insinuating that you are awesomer than Jade Robbins?
I don't know.
That is unheard of. Pish posh, pish posh. In this podcast, we hit on all kinds of notes in web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes with all kinds of links and anything else we have to say for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. And if it's an old episode not on the front page, you can click episodes at the top to get a full listing of all of our episodes or use the search bar. Also quite useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we find a lot of people, myself included, actually, whenever sometimes I'll be hanging out or something and I need a web app or something that I knew we talked about on the show, I use that search bar quite a bit because it's pretty helpful. You're like, hey, oh, I need a web app for invoicing, but what was it? And I can hardly, sometimes it's so hard to remember the names, and I always search on there. I'm like, invoice, or I've searched for Geek Tools in the past, too, to find which like brand we actually recommended, because sometimes it's hard to remember them. I mean, if you do one every week, and you know, they're all pretty cool, and I don't, you know, I'll be honest with our listeners, I don't own every Geek Tool that we talk about on the show, because I'm not rich. I would like to, you know.
I just purchased the Zippo hand warmer today.
Did you?
Face Off.
Oh, yeah. Snap. I want to use it.
I'll have to let you try it out or whatever. I guess it, like, just like a couple milliliters of lighter fluid, you can warm your pocket for like 14 hours or something silly.
Yeah, exactly. So pretty excited to try that out. Let's move on to our news and follow-up. So, Mark, what was it? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago we were talking about user interface frameworks? And one of which we talked about was called Cappuccino. And you found a pretty cool little application written in Cappuccino.
Yeah, so it's just like a little CSS editor, you know, written in Cappuccino. I thought it was cool just because it you know, propped up on the news aggregator type sites, and it, you know, it was something we talked about the time before, and so give it a shot. Try it out.
Yeah, well, you'll find with what I've seen from, you know, like Cappuccino apps especially, but also with, what was the other one? I can't remember the name, the other UI framework. Goodness, Sprout Core. What I found with those is especially stock ones, you can kind of smell them right away, and this definitely smells like a stock Cappuccino app. But it's pretty cool. You can sort of edit your CSS, and it sort of shows you what that style will look like as you edit it. And it's just a good sort of app to sort of see like what the power of things like Cappuccino are, because it creates a pretty much, you know, very much desktop app like feel inside a web browser.
Yeah, if you want to get a good feel like what can be accomplished with these types of frameworks, this is a good thing to check out.
Absolutely. The next little follow-up we have is that, speaking of UI frameworks that we discussed previously, you found out that one of them that we talked about, Backbase, which you said was primarily used by financial institutions, is actually used by QuickBooks.
Yeah, so I was doing some development with the QuickBooks SDK, and they had like a nice little an app where you could select like the different types of calls you wanted to make, and it would show you like the XML and like the different things you can do, and like they have different versions that are compatible with certain calls, and you just like select the different versions, and it like displays the XML for you, and it's written in Backbase, which was one of the frameworks we talked about. Wow. So I just noticed it because we talked about Backbase, and it said like powered by Backbase, so wanted to share that.
Cool. Another news of follow-up item, I was whining because one of the drives that I have in my Drobo was dead, and I was upset because I hate dead drives, and I'm pretty sure I replaced one of these drives already. Anyways, turns out, awesome stuff. I was talking to our friend Rob Lund, who had just also had a drive die, a Seagate drive, which apparently Seagate has like an amazing warranty, like 5 years, right, for a hard drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have the as far as I know, they have the longest or the, you know, the most extended warranty of any of the hard drive makers.
So so it's not 5 years, but he was like, you know, well, don't, you know, you should just check the warranty on that drive, you know, before you spend the money on a new one. And it turns out I checked it today and it is still under warranty and I'm getting it RMA'd as we speak. Which is excellent. Yeah, exactly. I'm still going to buy one more drive just so I have a third drive for redundancy and a little more storage, but totally pumped that I don't have to buy two hard drives. I only have to buy one.
Nice.
Yeah, it's great when things... And you know what's the sad part is? That's something I usually don't think to check a lot. Like if something dies, I don't think that, you know, that maybe it's like sometimes a lot of things they say on them, lifetime warranty or something, and they just assume that you're not going to ever cash that, you know, chip in. And they're usually right with people like me. I hardly ever, you know, check when something dies. You just say, oh, time to buy a new one because I'm kind of, you know, I like to buy new things and stuff. So, thank you to Rob for having me check that because you know what? It's under warranty. And, you know, if you have something and it dies, check the warranty first because you might be able to get it replaced because it was supposed to last longer than that anyways. I think we live in sort of a disposable generation where we just buy stuff and it dies and we're used to it. You know, I was talking to some friends about clothes and, you know, I'm definitely that feel like that way with clothes now. I buy a lot of cheap stuff that ends up not lasting very long. And we were talking about buying sort of nice dress shirts because I can never find a dress shirt that fits me. And I was thinking, you know, like a $50 dress shirt that's tailored to fit me as comfortably as possible is probably worth it. And if it is, you know, tailor-made, you know, nice and custom, it should last a long, long time. So I'm trying to change my ways, but this is a good example of that, you know. Something died, and instead of just throwing it away and buying a new one, Rob's just, I checked the warranty. The warranty is still good. I'm getting it replaced.
Nice. Good to hear.
Yeah, it's always nice when that sort of stuff works out. All right, I'm actually really excited about this because let's get to our geek tool of the week. So what we've been doing for one episode now, I think we've only done one, is talking about for geek tools, cooking our own food. Mark and I, I've been sort of a fan of cooking stuff in the kitchen and sort of, you know, I don't know what you call it, like chefery, gastronomy or whatever for a long time. And you're sort of just now trying to get a little better at it. You just never really had the opportunity or time, but you decided to try and cook your own food. So we've been trying to do a series where we've been helping people who may be in the same situation who haven't had a lot of, you know, experience in the kitchen or anything, try and get into cooking your own food because I think Mark will also agree that it's super fun.
Yeah. And, you know, reading the cooking book that I got, mentioned last episode, it really talked about the importance of having a good knife. And that's definitely something I didn't really think about. It's like, oh, just a knife is a knife and I never sharpen them and all that stuff. But I can see the importance of that when you're trying to do some of the cuts, like the fancier cuts when you're chopping onions and things.
Yeah.
Like chopping an onion, it's not something you think about, or at least for me. And I guess there's techniques to it to where you can make like really even, you know, pieces of
like an even onion. Chop. Yeah. When you're chopping, you want, but a lot of things with cooking, especially when you're frying stuff, similar sized pieces are very important. It helps you time your cooking. So if everything is the same size, like if you are, you know, you cube potatoes for frying them in the frying pan or something, if you have pieces that are bigger than the others, they cook unevenly. So the bigger pieces are harder to cook. The smaller ones will cook and get mushy. So things like, you know, chopping an onion, you want things to be as consistently sized as possible. You don't want little chunks that are super overcooked and big raw chunks of onion. So yeah, there are techniques to that. And one of the most important things you can do when you're cooking, and I'm gonna butcher the term, but it's called mise en place. And I can't remember what it stands for exactly, but basically the whole point is that you have everything prepared to cook. So cooking itself is usually very fast and it's probably the easiest part. You know, you have a hot pan, you're cooking everything, you get it done. It's really quick. The key to a lot of really good cooking is having everything prepared already. So and a big part of preparation is chopping stuff up, measuring your ingredients. So chopping your ingredients requires a really good knife. And a lot of people, like my sister is the queen of this. She has a terrible set of knives. Half of them, you know, are dull as as you would believe. And so when I go over to her house to visit for like Thanksgiving, I try and help out in the kitchen, and it's driving me nuts because like I can't cut a potato without squishing it halfway down because it won't cut. So these knives, so our geek tool of the week is actually two things. These are the Victorinox Fibrox handled knives. And so the classic sort of knife is your 8-inch chef's knife. So the Victorinox Fibrox 8-inch chef's knife, the chef's knife is a knife with a sort of angled blade. It's really good for rocking. So like if you're trying to mince like herbs and stuff, you know, you can do that rocking action for a chop. And these are like a good quality chef knife, like some things you don't want to skimp on, and a good chef's knife is one of them. And so things like America's Test Kitchen, I've seen other articles on a lot of cooking blogs and stuff say that really for your bang for your buck, this Victorinox chef's knives are amazing knives for the price. So the 8-inch chef's knife is $26.99. Like these handles are really good. They're comfortable, good balance, really good metal on them. So, you know, like if you look at chef's knife, you go into a store, like they can go up to like a couple $100, possibly even thousands. I don't know, but, good knives are really expensive. And so when exports like, America's Test Kitchen, which is, what is the magazine? Chef something magazine. Anyways, very, you know, people that know what they're doing recommend like this knife and say it's a really good knife for the deal. You know, it's something really nice. So this is a really good knife. Your traditional chef's knife is a French sort of chef's knife. Another really popular all-purpose sort of knife these days is called the Santoku knife, which is doesn't have quite the angle that the chef's knife does. It's more of a flat, and it has like little divots in the side, which supposedly help it cut because it's a thinner piece of metal. Either or, it's kind of a preference. Like right now I have a Santoku knife, but I want to get more of an 8-inch traditional chef's knife. So when I do, I'm going to be buying these Victorinox 8-inch chef's knife. Really great knives for a really great price and super important in the kitchen.
Excellent. Well said. I think you convinced me. I have like one of the Santoku version, and it's just a cheapo, not very sharp. And, you know, in the book highlights on why it's important to be sharp. It's actually more dangerous to have a dull knife because you're putting a lot more pressure through it and things like that. They had a whole reason of why it was safer to use a sharp knife. So,
and because I had a second to look it up, mise en place means putting in place. And it basically means having everything in place, set up and ready to cook. So having all your ingredients measured, all of your vegetables chopped, your meat prepped and everything, so that when time comes, you can just turn on the stove and get everything done. Because the problem is a lot of times where your cooking mistakes happen is where you're trying to watch the pan while trying to chop some vegetables or trying to measure another ingredient. Mm-hmm. So if you have everything in place, this is why when you watch cooking shows and stuff, they have a billion little tiny bowls everywhere. And when my wife first bought a million tiny little bowls, I was kind of frustrated until I really started trying to make sure I have everything ready to cook when it's time to go. And it makes a huge difference.
All right.
All right. So check them out, the Victorinox Fibrox handled knives. I've read so many places say that these are amazingly good knives for the price. So if you're really getting into cooking, you're a beginner, you don't want to spend $200 on a knife, you know, get one of these and try it out and see what a good knife will do for you, because it'll help you out a lot. Let's move on to our web apps, Mark, huh?
Yeah, so the first web app we have is one that you found called PadMapper.
Yeah, PadMapper. So like looking for an apartment is always kind of a stressful deal. There's a lot of places like Classifieds, and now there's Craigslist, and those are sort of the two big ones, but it can be a really big pain in the butt. And oftentimes for me, the very first, most important thing that I worry about is where is it located? The location is such an important part when looking for a place. So I saw that a guy posted this thing on PadMapper, and what's always funny, anytime I see an app about finding an apartment and stuff, I always kind of just pass it off because I was like, well, it's probably like, you know, San Francisco and Chicago or New York. Like they usually don't, mm-hmm. you know, these aren't general enough. Well, this PadMapper, I'm sure it has other sources, but its primary source is Craigslist, which there is Craigslist like here in Bozeman now. Which makes me really happy. So it actually does work. Like I can go to it. And the best part is it's a Google Maps mashup. So it's just, you know, a big giant Google map. It shows you places as little pins. You can click on them. And it has all the details that you have off of Craigslist, like how many bedrooms, bathrooms, how much it'll cost, But of course, the big thing is the map. It tells me where it's located. So like if something is located, you know, in a part of town I don't like, I don't even have to look at that. I don't have to read every single ad to try and see where they're located. Like when ads don't have an address, I just don't even consider them. It drives me insane because I want to know where they are. So what's cool about this is you can click on a place. It tells you all the details from Craigslist, and you can also filter based on those details. So you can say like, I'm only looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. You know, I don't want to pay more than $1,200 a month. I can't afford that. And it'll filter it from them based on that. You can also click on them, and then you can write your own notes about it. You can see the street view. It also has something called a walk score, which I guess is another website where I think, you know, if it'll tell you how nice walking around is or something. I don't know. I don't even use a walk score. That was something I just found just now. Oh, okay. So walk score is actually really cool. It'll tell you things like restaurants nearby, coffee places nearby. Like this one place apparently has a Pizza Hut 0.4 miles away, Mountain High Espresso coffee shop 0.4 miles away, the nearest grocery store, so Albertsons, half a mile away. So that's really cool. It tells you a lot of stuff about a place based on its location and the data in Craigslist. And you can also filter from it. Like you could filter based on, you know, what you want. And for me, it's just, it's the interface I want. And it uses a source that is getting full of stuff. Like I wish it could pull from my local classifieds, but I know that's hard to do. Craigslist is huge. It's everywhere. And it can parse all the data from Craigslist and show that at least. And that made me pretty happy.
Yeah, it's got integrated street view. So you can just click on that. I mean, looking at it, I this blows Craigslist out of the water. Like, because Craigslist, you're gonna click on the title. The title is the thing that, you know, leads you to that thing, you know, that apartment, yeah, and then you're gonna look at it from there on, and then you're gonna, you know, filter it once you're already there. This way, you can start with the location and then click on it and then do your filtering. Also, a really cool feature. I don't know if this is a Craigslist part or PadMapper, but it says, you know, like the apartment I'm looking at is 17% less than the median nearby 3-bedroom apartment. Yeah. So like it tells you this one's, you know, a good deal for what it is.
I think that's PadMapper using other values from Craigslist to determine that.
I see.
Yeah, that's way cool. You're totally right. And so when you click, this is another cool thing too. If you click on an apartment, like if there's pictures, it'll put the links in there, put the pictures in there. But if you click on it, it takes you to the Craigslist listing, but still gives you the little PadMapper bar on the side, which is totally awesome. I mean, this is such a great little app. I hate moving. I hate moving so much. But I wish I would have known about this before we moved last time, because it for me, again, the primary information is where is it? I want to know where it is, because where the location matters so much to me, because I like to walk to places. So, you know, like if I'm like 2 miles out of town, that doesn't do it for me.
Cool. Nice little app.
Yeah, definitely a cool little app, and this is one of those jewels where, like, I saw the post on Hacker News where some guy was talking about stuff, and I was like, oh, this guy did it, and awesome little app. I think if you're looking for an apartment and you have Craigslist in your area, the primary sources are Craigslist and apartments.com. There's other sources, but I think they're pretty sort of, what would you say, low volume, especially for any area other than like big cities. But there, we have a lot of listeners that live in larger cities too. So check it out, padmapper.com. Totally satisfied with that one. And on the same sort of Google Maps mashup awesomeness, the next app we're going to talk about is mapcrunch.com. And what this is I guess, you know, pretty plainly, is it's a way to get random locations in Google Street View,
which is totally cool. And you can specify the country that you want to go. So like if you want to go to Antarctica and just browse around, or like, you know, maybe maybe you're going to visit Germany in the summer or something, you can click on it and just kind of browse around random street views. Another cool thing is they have a view, like a street view of the day, which is always like either a nice sun, like today it's a nice sunset on Vancouver, Canada's beach.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it was yesterday, there was a picture of a house with like 15 plastic cows in front of it, yeah, which is kind of funny.
The thing is with this is what you don't realize with Street View is, first of all, the cameras on there are pretty darn good. Like these are not crappy quality images. And Google Street View is freaking everywhere. That blows my mind, the places that it's at. It's all over the place. And they're really cool images. The cool thing I really like too is, you know, there's all kinds of options. You can say North America, Europe, or you can pick specific countries like Mark mentioned. There's a checkbox for cities only. So if you don't like the nature stuff, you just want pictures of, you know, cities, you can check that too. My favorite is you can check the slideshow, set it like a 4-second delay, and it'll just change every 4 seconds. And then it also has full screen mode, so you can set the slideshow, go to full screen mode, and it's like a random sort of slideshow of, you know, pretty nice pictures in full screen that changes 4 seconds. And you'll probably never, ever, ever see the same picture twice.
No, it's pretty cool. I like just hitting the go, you know, the random button and trying to guess where I'm at. And this one is kind of wide open and kind of pretty looking. And I wouldn't have guessed that it was Australia. I think of Australia as like deserty or
exactly
something like that. But it's very green and pretty.
Yeah. So cool. Yet again, another really cool app. I mean, some of them, you know, you can look for the sort of Google Street View funnies, but you know, what a cool little simple web app. So check it out by going to mapcrunch.com. Hey, if you guys listening out there, if you have a news and follow-up, a geek tool or a web app or a topic that you want us to discuss on the show, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Tweet us out. Send us an email. Let us know. We love to hear from you guys. You guys always send us great ideas. And you we get to talk about what you guys want us to talk about, too. So I don't think there's a loser in that whole equation at all. So do that for us. Let's get into our topic this week. We have a topic I think that it was either requested or we discussed about doing a long time ago. And those are sort of like, I mean, what do you call these, Mark? Project management methodologies, project cycle things. What do you call them?
I'm going to say software engineering philosophies.
Okay, that's a great way to put it.
So I guess I'm going to start off with, we're going to start off with agile development, just because it encompasses some of these other, philosophies. And what I mean, what do you think about when you think about agile development?
Well, okay. So, I mean, I have an idea. I think you might want to hit waterfall first, because waterfall, agile was sort of a reaction to waterfall. And I think most people will recognize waterfall right away.
Okay, so waterfall doesn't just apply to – so waterfall is a traditional methodology for developing stuff. It's used in construction. So for example, in construction, so there's 7 stages of waterfall, and you can't complete the next stage until you're totally done with the previous stage, and that's why it's waterfall. You can't go upstream. Requirements, specifications. So before we do anything, it's like, what do we need to get out of this? You know, you have to lay out very specific specifications. Number 2 is the design. This is, you know, blueprinting. This is very kind of like construction. You're designing, you're making the blueprints of what it's going to be and how it's going to act. Then you're going to start construction, which would be, you know, the coding. Or if you're building a house, it's actually building the walls and laying the foundation. And then you do integration, and then testing and bugging comes after that, testing and debugging, and then you install it. When, you know, once you've tested it and you're pretty sure it's going to work good, you actually integrate it and install it, and then it's maintenance from there on.
Right.
You know, things break, you file bugs and you fix the thing.
Right. So this has been used in, you know, traditional engineering for a long time. And for a lot of things, it works really, really well, right? So, I mean, if you look at thinking like a building, right? A building, prototyping a building is really hard, right? It's really expensive to build a whole building and say, that's not right. We need to remake it, right? That's really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So really having this big requirements and design phase at the beginning is very important to have it all laid out, have it all scheduled out, all ready to go, because they're very expensive projects that prototyping is very difficult for. And that's where these other sort of methodologies came out from, is because, you know, with software, you don't know all the requirements before completion. Oftentimes they change midway, and prototyping is very cheap on it, you know, comparatively, right? I can design, you know, a sort of sample software system, and if we don't like it, we scrap it, and it's not billions of dollars as it would be, you know,
right,
with supplies and stuff as a building.
That prototype might save you quite a bit of money in development if it's, you know, the customers don't like it or whatnot. It's not like you're wasting lumber and nails and things like that.
Exactly.
So that's kind of the traditional approach. Software is not super new. Computers haven't been around as long as, you know, constructing buildings.
Exactly.
And so it was just kind of, well, you know, software, they thought in the early days that software is kind of like, you know, building stuff.
Right.
So
engineering is it. They were kind of, they were like, engineering is engineering. We're going to do the same thing we did with engineering in the past. And Waterfall does work. It's not like you can't build software with the Waterfall method. You absolutely can. It's just that so these other sort of, you know, quote unquote, agile things came about because they thought that there would be the software is different than other engineering. And maybe we need to take a different approach to how we develop it as opposed to other sort of disciplines of engineering.
So in February of 2001, 17 guys went skiing in Utah and got together while they were skiing and discussed, you know, how can we do this better than this waterfall method? And they published what's called the Manifesto for Agile Software Development. And this kicked off all these new types of software development philosophies that we're going to talk about. And I just wanted to read the manifesto real quick just because it's only a few sentences. Mm-hmm. And it's so we are uncovering better ways of developing software by doing it and helping others do it. Through this work, we have come to value, and here comes the sentences, individuals and interactions over processes and tools, working software over comprehensive documentation, customer collaboration over contract negotiation, and then responding to change over following a plan. Mm. And that's pretty much it. That's the whole manifesto.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it's really broad and it kind of hits some good points.
Yeah, it's like an overall look at it. They're saying that overall, this is what we should do rather than focusing on these things. But that isn't like a process for software development at all. You can't just say these things and now go build software, right? So this is where specific philosophies and sort of ideas came out of sort of the Agile manifesto, the Agile process.
So they have 12 key principles. I'll just hit a few. One of them is like welcoming changing requirements even late in the development. Mm-hmm. That's kind of radical, you know, as opposed to like making design specifications and, you know, making blueprints and then sticking to it, you know, by the book, I guess. This is something that's radical. It's a little bit different. It's like, you know, if you want to change the software late in the game, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go over. I'll talk about all the 12 key principles. So the first one is customer satisfaction by rapid delivery of useful software, and this is important. So instead of, you know, again, sort of preparing all the way through and then developing it in one chunk and delivering it to the customer, Agile focuses on develops, you know, small chunks as much as you can, deliver it to the customer, get feedback immediately. And like you said, that's so you don't send it all the way to the customer and then realize that you've been developing what they don't want all along. The next one is, or we already talked about, welcome changing requirements even late development. Again, you're right, totally radical, because usually it's, you know, if in any other sort of the waterfall development process, if requirements change midstream, it's like, oh man, we can't go back to requirements. It's a waterfall, you know. it's a big deal to change. The next one,
working software. Oh, go ahead.
By all means,
working software is delivered frequently. I guess you are kind of hit on that one. Working software is a principle of measure of progress. So, you know, the software has to kind of work and you have to, you know, deliver something that's useful to the customer each time. Not just saying, oh yeah, we're working on it. We'll be done in 3 months.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly.
Giving some measure of progress.
And it's, and working is another key part. Working software, it's not totally broken. Like you can't see any of it, you know, 2 weeks into it. It's like, if you have an iteration, you work on it. And when you're done, you have working software that you can deliver to them and get feedback on. So it's not totally busted, which is, you know, kind of a crazy thing as well. The next one is sustainable development, and you're able to maintain a constant pace. And this is a big problem that happens in other software. It's like with Waterfall, you know, it's like, oh, we're behind. We had this scheduled that after 3 weeks, you know, of development, we're supposed to be this way far through. Let's pile on, you know, 30 more developers and see what happens. And that just doesn't work with software a lot because it takes, you know, it takes a long time to bring people up to speed, and it's a different process than engineering.
The next one is close daily cooperation between the business people and the developers. Nothing worse than developing this feature and working really hard on it and then finding out later that business or that customer doesn't even want that feature at all. So it's very important to be communicating with them at all times during the development process.
Right. Or if you can't, yeah, I mean, if you're unable to get a hold of a customer, you don't know if you're developing what they want at all. So it's, you know, the whole point is they're there, they're close. They're an active participant in this process and part of that team.
Face-to-face conversation is always better, you know, a better form of communication. When sending emails back and forth, it can be a waste of time. And, you know, emails have their places. It's good for certain things, but face-to-face and getting and talking to people can really narrow down some of the requirements. Sometimes business people will say, oh, I want this, but they don't say really why. If you go have a five-minute conversation with them, you might find out that they don't actually want that. Yeah. They want something different.
Projects are built around motivated individuals who should be trusted. And this is a big thing of, like, you know, the feeling part of a team, have them motivated, and they're trusted. Don't look over their shoulder constantly, because if the software developers are able to develop the best software that they think possible, it really, you know, it helps motivate them and it creates a better quality product in the end.
The next one is continuous attention to technical excellence and good design.
Right. It should be a point of pride that it doesn't suck. You want it to be good and smart and feel like you did something well and accomplished something that you're proud of.
Simplicity. I think, you know, this applies to a lot of things in life. You know, if it's simple, it's easier to maintain. It's easier to debug. It's easier for new developers to come in and see it and start working on it. It's just, I mean, it's something that's hard to do, but it's easy to say. But
absolutely.
Focus on simplicity.
The next one is self-organizing teams. It's, you know, it's sort of, again, it's that, it's like the planning, and it's like the people over planning and process, because if people can organize their teams to how they're more efficient, then they'll work better. You know, it's like nothing sucks more than getting stuck with a team of people that you don't gel with, because it just makes everything harder. Whether or not that's the plan or whatnot, it's harder to do. So being able to organize your own team and work on things that you enjoy as opposed to, you know, being assigned stuff. And the last one is just regular adaptation to changing circumstances. And that's the whole point, is your fast, swift iterations. You don't have to worry about it. You're delivering stuff fast and constant, and there's a lot of movement on it. So those are the 12 key principles to agile development. I think next week, Mark, we're going to go into some specific agile development philosophies like extreme programming and Kanban. To further sort of, you know, because I think, you know, these Agile, Waterfall and Agile are sort of two different, you know, clouds, like spheres of ideas. And then we can, I think next week we'll get into some more specific Agile development philosophies where there's, you know, processes sort of thought up ahead of time that we can talk about.
Very excited. I'm really excited about Kanban and extreme programming. They're both pretty cool. And I like to... Like test-driven development and stuff like that makes me excited. So
yeah, exactly. So cool. Tune in next week. We'll get into some further details with those. And that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you, you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. If you haven't done so already, we would highly appreciate it. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can tweet us out on Twitter, send us an email. We really love to hear from you guys, and we'd appreciate it if you did that as well, because any criticism is better than silence, because you have a chance to improve. Thank you for listening to the show, guys, and we will see you next week.